Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. Sarah is here. We are going to talk for F1 for about 5 minutes, and then we'll talk about far more interesting racing this weekend. So, Frenchie, let's go to F1 predictions. I know Sarah did make predictions, so here we go, and here's Daniel in the background, so I'm going to go on mute.
Yeah, let's see. The race was really boring, so let's just recap these predictions and talk about two news items quickly, and then, like you said, we can move on. For a good weekend, I picked Pierre Gasly, and he finished ninth for the second time this season. I don't know if I'd classify it as a good weekend. I mean, he had points, but I think he was about where his car is at right now because Ocon finished eighth right in front of him. You had Albon, who retired, unfortunately.
Nice. Yeah.
That tracks.
That's as per usual. Okay.
As far as Mike's predictions go.
Okay. Rude. But
bad weekend was I had Oscar Piastri, which he finished 15th. Yeah, I would say McLaren is still not doing so well.
Nope.
He still has no points. And you picked Haas as a team. They finished 10th and 12th, which I would say is not terrible.
Correct. Again, awesome. Fantastic. Fantastic predictions.
Wait, I don't even remember. I just have names written down for the last one. I don't even know what the category we picked was. Was it a Q3 appearance? Q2 appearance?
Sure. Maybe.
If it was, you guys don't remember?
No.
Guys, come on.
Listen, Sarah, as soon as I get done recording, I almost always forget exactly what I say. Like, I can't write a description afterwards because I don't remember.
You know, well, Mike, you're turning out to be one of those predictable people.
It's fair. I respect that.
If Frenchie, why do you look so confused?
Because if we picked Q3, neither of them got in Q3. Like, I picked, I think, Zhou Guan Yu, and he qualified 12th. And then Mike picked Logan Sargeant, if this is what we chose, which I don't know if you would have picked him to go into Q3. Mm.
No. If he did, then that, there's no way that could have been the category. If Mike has half a brain, which I know he does,
right,
that couldn't have been a category.
So what is the category? I don't even remember.
Best looking under 25-year-old F1 driver.
Okay.
That's actually not that bad. That's pretty good.
I also thought of that totally on the spot.
How old is Zhou Guan Yu?
It's got to be like 22 or something, 23 maybe.
He has good hair for sure. He's 23.
Nailed it. I'm heating up now that we're getting past the predictions.
Okay, yeah. So I would say that I won that, even though we don't know what the last category was.
We'll give you the win this time. So I want to know what you guys think of the first Alonso penalty, the lining up on the grid spot incorrectly. Now, when you see the replay, it looks like he's about 6 inches to the left of the painted white lines. Doesn't make a damn difference.
I don't know if it's about making a difference. I think it's about the FIA trying to be consistent in when they give a penalty and when they don't. I mean, it's not like they actually are consistent, but I think the whole point of that would be if they were to not give him a penalty this time and then someone else were to do it and for some reason have an advantage because of it, then they would have gone back to the Albon thing and been like, well, Albon was 6 inches away and he wasn't penalized. Just because, I don't know. I think that was probably honestly a good move by the FIA just to cover their tracks. But I mean, they made a number of mistakes following the race, so you can't really defend them.
Frenchie?
I basically have the same argument that Sarah does. I think they were right to penalize because there's a line there, right? And it's just the rule is the rule. You have to treat it black and white, that if you cross the line in any way, it is a violation and you get a penalty. You have to give the same penalty every single time. Do they now have to fix it? Because, I mean, every driver has come out and said how hard it is to line the cars up correctly. Yes, I think they have to do something about it and have sensors or whatever it is, cameras, I don't know. But it's F1, it's supposed to be the peak of technology. They should be able to figure out how to line their cars up correctly in a spot on the grid. And Alonso's a master. Like, if he even made this mistake, then it goes to show you, I think, how difficult it is.
Yeah, that was kind of my next question in terms of, like, okay, so the rule's the rule. Agreed. That's fine. Can we alter the rule? Because it just seems like a silly rule. And with those tire, the piece of aero bodywork over the tire, I can see it making
the
it
eyebrows.
Hard. Yeah, the eyebrows. Reminds me of those stupid like eyelashes that weirdos put on their VW bugs.
The lift
cars.
Oh,
yeah.
That they had eyelashes on it for a while. Yeah.
Is there a way the FIA can make it more of like a suggestion or, hey, if your front tire is 6 inches over, like, you know, we're not going to penalize you? Because the rule just the rule needs to change.
I mean, I think there are, just as Frenchie said, there are a number of things that could be done easily that would just nix the issue in general. Like, they could have some sort of sensors. They always have a million crew members around while they line up on the grid. A crew member can easily see, hey, you're 6 inches over the line, back up, repark. Like, it's not the easiest thing, obviously, because engines aren't on. They have to like push and pull the car. But, you know, there are very low-hanging fruit ways to fix the issue so you can abide by the rules. And so that way the FIA can continue to be consistent or try to be consistent when it comes to that rule specifically. And like, there are workarounds for drivers to easily solve that issue. Like, I'm honestly surprised that his team didn't notice that and say something during the lineup.
Yeah.
Because even if it's difficult for him as skilled of a driver, whatever, like, he still has an entire team around him for eons figuring that out.
So do we know if, like, in that case, like, if the team tells Alonso, like, hey, you have to back up 6 inches, is that allowed?
Probably not.
Like, I agree, but you know how weird they are with like radio transmissions on the formation lap. Like, didn't they ban radio communications between the team and the driver specifically on the formation lap?
You don't even need to do a radio communication. The team is right there with him. If it's a problem that they can't back up once they're on the grid, then that's something the FIA has to solve. Because if the FIA is saying you need to park in this line, but then doesn't give them the chance to do that, then that's when they're being hypocritical.
Okay. I can respect
that. I'm
going
to make something up right here that I think, I mean, who knows if this could even work, but you know how they have the onboard camera that's like above the driver's head? Why couldn't you project that screen to like the little screen on the steering wheel? For while they're trying to park and pull in, like, you could have a kind of a, I don't know, that sounds possible to me, but I'm no engineer or software person, but I think it could be an easy fix. Like Sarah said, it doesn't seem like something that they need to continue to penalize when we could just fix this and avoid stupid penalties that ruin racing because you have 5 seconds in the pit and you take away someone's, you know, ability to fight in the race.
I feel like,
and I think the penalty needs to be there because if they do park outside of the lines, they could theoretically get a race advantage. So whether it's 2 inches, 6 inches, 12 inches, doesn't really matter. They have to park in the lines.
Size does not matter in this case.
Okay.
It's about how quick you are off the line.
All right. Well, how do you follow up with that one? Okay. Let's move on to the other. I think the only other thing we have to talk about, other than great job by Perez to maintain his gap the second half of the race. So Alonso comes into service penalty on lap 18 or 19 or 20, somewhere around there, whenever that the Stroll retirement was. And then the penalty isn't announced until after the podium celebration. Honestly, I went out. I took the dog for a walk. I was going to get coffee. I was done for the day. I walked back in and it was on the TV. So how do we feel about that?
But then it was reversed again. Then he got
it
back.
It was reversed again. Yes, that's what I was getting there.
Sorry. It's okay. Just jumping straight to the gun.
It's okay. So how do we feel about the lengthy delay in announcing a penalty like that?
Pathetic. It's just like incredible level of ineptitude. I mean, the way that Aston Martin was able to pull up, what, 7 instances to refute what the FIA had said, like, this is 7 times that quickly, right? To show them, hey, you've let this fly 7 times. I mean, that it's just absurd to me. Like, I don't know why they continue to embarrass themselves, because number one, right, the second penalty about the whole, like, oh, the jack on the back of the car is touching. And that's that, you know, you're not serving your penalty then. That seems like a really ridiculous rule, in my opinion. Like, if it's touching the car, that's just being super OCD about it and unnecessary, which is typical FIA. But to not decide it, like you said, for, I don't know, what, 30 laps? And then also the entire podium celebration, like, hey, Alonso, you're in third place. You got to celebrate on the podium. Everyone's really excited. And now we're just going to strip it from you and give it to George Russell. I don't know why it took them so long. There's really no excuse for it.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest qualm. I agree. It's a stupid rule. But again, just as we said, I don't want to like be hypocritical on us just saying, you know, rules are rules. And if it's in the rule book, you have to follow it. But for me, the biggest thing is how long it took them to do it. Like, they had the entire race there's 50 laps, I think, at Jeddah. And it took them like 30 to make that decision. And for someone to celebrate a podium, and it wasn't it like Alonso's 100th podium or something too. So it was like a very celebratory Correct. Podium. It wasn't like a regular moment. It was something that was like really a moment of celebration for Alonso and the team. And so for them to make that decision after that fact doesn't make any sense to me, because they have so long to make those decisions. And like the FIA, they have access to all of these different cameras. It's usually a lot of the stewards that are running these races have run races in the past. They have at least a decade of experience for the most part. And if one of them doesn't, there's usually around 3 to 4 stewards. At least 3 of them are people who are very well expertise, that they would know what decisions have been made in the past on the same circumstance for the most part. I don't know. I just think that the timing didn't make any sense, and the flip-flop just as you said, Frenchie, just made them look stupid for something that could have easily been avoided.
Yeah. Yep. I don't really have much to add to that, other than I think it was like the late 90s, there was like a rule that a penalty had to be announced within, it was either 25 laps or 25 minutes. And I don't know which one it was. Either way, If a penalty happens in the last like 5 laps of the race, like, okay, fine, it's going to bleed over, that's so be it.
Mm-hmm.
But there should be like a cutoff, like, okay, you know, an hour of time has passed or 20 laps or whatever. And then if we can't decide on a penalty, it's done. Like, you're done. You can give them like a penalty point or a fine and be like, listen, you guys shouldn't have done that, but we didn't impose a penalty in the right time, so we can't do anything. Instead, you just look like goofballs because now you've been like, no, you can't have that. Oh, wait, actually, like, you guys were right. So, yes, you can. So, you know, we'll give it back to you. It was just really dumb.
Frenchie, I'm just surprised in the grand scheme of things that the FIA make these announcements publicly and they, like, people publish this online on the internet before they even talk to the team about it. Or, like, you know, like, the fact that they published it and then Aston was like, no, here are 7 other instances where you didn't do it, but they wait until it was published publicly. Like, I don't know. I'm just surprised that there isn't some sort of, at least like, not necessarily internal dialogue where they can feel like they can sway the decision, but at least give it to them first, give them like 10 minutes to look at it and process it and like try to refute it or not. And like within that time period, you can refute it or not and like make your case. And so that way, none of this goes public. I think the biggest issue here is that it just went public. And then everyone was like, okay, the FIA is doing this again. When again, if it was just like an internal conversation, it could have been solved pretty easily and quickly.
Frenchie, you stuck your hand up a second ago like you wanted to jump in.
I was trying to figure out who the stewards are, but it's really hard to find their identity. I think probably purposefully because they don't want people getting hate. So I don't know who the stewards were at this race, but just the whole thing about the FIA deciding the 2021 championship and taking forever to do it. I mean, they already have a bad reputation with this, just taking and the whole cost cap thing. Like, they just take forever to make these decisions and it's drags out in public, like Sarah said, and it's just, it's a way to make your organization look incredibly unprofessional and kind of takes away from the racing itself. Although, I mean, this was the most exciting part of the race at Jeddah. So maybe this was kind of like staged because there was nothing else to even really get excited over, except that what Max was pissed off that no, Sergio was pissed off that Max got the fastest lap at the end of the race. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have a question. This kind of comes from listening to James Hinchcliffe and Alex Rossi talk about it on Off Track. Our boy, Jos Verstappen, and I say that with the utmost sarcasm. Obviously, we've all seen the fact that, like, he was miserable when Checo was walking through. I'm going to leave out what their opinions are. Is it a big deal, or is it just kind of like, I don't know. Before I give my opinion, go ahead. Somebody go first.
I have to say first that I've seen a full clip. Like, there are the screenshots of him looking cranky, or like the kind of clip where Sergio's getting high fived by everyone and he's just kind of frowning. I mean, yeah, he was frowning, but he eventually, like, if you watch the end of the clip, he shakes Sergio's hand.
Okay. I did not see that.
It was out of context, I think. And I can find that full clip and we can try to post it, but I don't think Jos, or Yas, however you say it appropriately, was that upset about it. I mean, but he's allowed to also like show his emotions. It doesn't really matter what he thinks. And I don't think Sergio cares either.
Sarah?
So my thoughts on, I mean, just him as a human, as a person, is he puts so much emphasis and pressure on his son to succeed and do well. A big part of that is not just obviously getting the race results, but also having the public perception that you deserve your wins, or like that you're liked. If you're not liked, then people are going to try to nitpick every good thing that you do and bring you down. So I'm just more surprised in the general grand scheme of things. And again, maybe this is like my marketing comms brain coming out, but like how that's not it's not even that it's not part of his pressure that he puts on his son to be well-liked so people respect him more. It's he's really doing things in front of the media that is not only putting himself in a bad light, but by extension, putting his son in a bad light, and by extension, losing respect of the larger Formula One fan base, which we know to be true. We know that there are very, very staunch Max Verstappen supporters. We know that there are very, very staunch Max Verstappen, quote unquote, haters, if you want to call it that. And a lot of that comes from his presence in front of the media. And a lot of that has come from his father's presence from the media. So I'm just more shocked that, like, if he truly wants his son to succeed as much as it apparently seems that he does, based on his actions towards his son, that's not something that he's aware of during moments like this. If you have a teammate that's winning and that you know you are going to be shown on TV because you're standing next to the team and you are at the front of the barrier, that you're going to continue to let your emotions get the better of you in a circumstance in which you know that you should not be acting that way. Again, that's just more of like a philosophical idea on the whole thing, but I just think it makes no freaking sense for his actual end goal.
That's definitely a lot deeper than I'm going to go in just saying, why are we surprised? And why are we surprised? And like, And I'm not like discounting other people's opinions, but like, this is Jos Verstappen. He's an ass. Like, it's okay. Like, Sarah's not wrong. Sarah's like, I agree now that like I hear it from that standpoint, but also like everybody's, oh my God, he's the worst. Like, yeah, we know. Like, if you expected anything else, maybe you should take a step back.
100%.
I'm going to sort of play devil's advocate, even though I also hate Jos. Number one, I really feel like the guy has anger management issues. So like he's not going to be able to control his face or anything. Like I assume he's like a helmet throwing type person. I think he got in altercations at kart tracks. Like, I'm pretty sure he actually had criminal charges from that. If you go look it up.
Yeah.
I'm going to say allegedly, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Also, number two is, if this is the worst thing you think Jos has done, go look into him, because this is like, this is not a reason to hate him. If you already hate him, it kind of adds to it. But like, this is, you know, not the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, you should already have your opinion of him.
Yeah. But okay. That's for people who know the sport, right? There's still a lot of people who are really getting into the sport this year. And so they're like, who is this father character who's being a piece of crap, right? And so it continues to be brought up in the media because, well, A, again, the race was boring, so you got to focus on something. But B, it's like you're giving these people personalities. It's probably going to end up in DTS in some degree. Like, you know, it's there for the entertainment of the sport as well. Yeah, Dancing with the Stars. Exactly. How did you know?
Can you imagine?
I would actually love to see, imagine Joss on Dancing with the Stars.
He would rage quit.
Fantastic. Anyway, so I guess we have one thing of F1 news, and then we're going to talk Sebring and more fun racing. So I'll turn it over to Frenchie.
Okay, yeah. So the only news that we have is basically that McLaren has scapegoated James Key, who, as I was talking to host about this morning, has been in F1 since 1998. He started with Jordan. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's not some incompetent hack who doesn't belong in F1. But essentially, the team was underperforming. This car sucks. And they had to make a restructure. So, what's his name? David Sanchez from Ferrari is coming over. Someone from Ferrari coming over. Good luck with that, McLaren. Like, just let's see how that goes. I am interested to see, but I don't know if this is going to solve anything for them by replacing one person and change, like, restructuring, because now they have to adjust to a new system. But you know what? I guess they had to make it look like they were doing something for their shareholders.
So to double down on one point, the guy coming over from Ferrari, what's his name again?
David Sanchez.
There's that thing that when you go from one team to another, you can't.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Do anything for like a year. So you're already now like behind the eight ball even more, because you are, you know, David Sanchez can't do anything until at some point next year. I forget when. Maybe it's later this year. Anyway, this is, you know, he's a scapegoat, but it's like any team that fires their coach or their general manager.
Purdue,
maybe. I don't know. Did Purdue sucks.
I think so, they will, right?
Like, yeah, I don't know. Ask Cody. Cody's the Purdue fan. But, you know, that's what happens. So, unfortunately, he was the scapegoat. Like, it sucks, and he probably deserves better, and hopefully he lands on his feet. But McLaren, anybody who thought McLaren was going to finish in the top five in the constructors this year is, unfortunately, in for a rude awakening. And it's very disappointing to see, but I'm sure Danny Ric is very happy right now.
Oh, he's rolling in that money. He was paid, what, $18 million to just go and enjoy his life? I mean, I know he wants to be racing, but I mean, it just sounds like McLaren is following in the footsteps of Ferrari's strategy decisions, which is not the idol or the symbol that you should be following. And their car is just horrible this year. So, I mean, I feel bad for Lando to some degree, but I mean, maybe they're just playing for the long term, long game, and hoping that this guy from Ferrari is really going to fix it. Maybe they just know that this year is a wash and they're dedicated to next year.
And maybe they know the Ferrari issues are really with the engine that blows up every other weekend. So, like, David Sanchez is an aero genius. And I don't know, I'm grasping at straws, but also making fun of Ferrari at the same time.
So you heard it here first. They're going to hire Mattia Binotto next.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
They're just going to go full in on Ferrari people.
What is Mattia doing now? Is he doing anything?
No, I don't think so. He has a vineyard though.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe he's just at his winery.
Oh, that's fancy.
Drinking wine.
Okay, let's move on. Sebring. So obviously this weekend was WEC and IMSA at Sebring, which was super fun. Sarah was there. So before we kind of just randomly rattle off thoughts about the weekend, Sarah, we've never been to Sebring. What was, other than leaving your license at registration, which I don't even think I told Frenchie.
You called me out on that one.
So, I didn't know that.
So I am walking the dog before I went on that date Friday, and I get a phone call and an email from some lady. I'm like, I ignored the phone call. I'm like, I don't know what phone number this is, because it wasn't a Florida phone number. And they pick up, and she's like, hi, do you work with Sarah Levinson? I'm like, mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, her license is in registration. I'm like, okay, I'm not there, so I can't help you. And she's like, well, just tell her. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
Well, that's because I didn't have my contact information. So if anything actually happened to me, or if they needed to reach me, that would have been a problem.
Yeah.
But no, the woman was super nice. I went back to go get it a few hours later. And she's like, it was totally my fault, sweetheart. I'm so sorry. I didn't give it back to you. And I was just like, thank you for telling me, because I was driving and I didn't have my license on me. So if there was any issues, I mean, to be fair, Frenchie, your face, I was literally driving from like one end of the track to the other where the parking lot was.
Oh,
like,
okay.
It wasn't a big deal.
I thought you were driving home and you had to go back.
No. This was on. So I got there first thing Friday morning.
Got it.
I picked up my registration at like 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. Friday. And host called me at like noon or like 1 o'clock. And I think I went back around 4. So no, it was like same day, totally fine. But yeah, they were super sweet. So maybe I've never, knock on wood, knock on whatever, I've never lost my license before or lost anything like that. So if I left that behind and I drove the 3.5 hours home without it, that would have been problematic. But yeah, Sebring was amazing. I mean, for, as you guys know, I've only done a handful of IMSA and WEC races. So really the biggest comparison for me was to Daytona. It was very different than Daytona just because obviously the WEC and the IMSA were split up between the 2 days. And it was really, really, I think honestly the most interesting part for me, obviously besides the incredible access that you get and how close you can get to the cars, how close anyone who attends can get to the cars and see anything, was watching people go back to back. Because I think it's one thing if you do a 24-hour race and like you go in with that mindset and that expectation, but I think it's another thing if you do an 8-hour race one day, a 12-hour race the next day. A lot of times people are racing even in different cars. Like there are some people who are doing LMP2 one day and like GT another, right? So that was just really interesting watching that happen, especially some of these drivers that are older, like Ben Keating did both and he's what, 51?
Yeah,
and like, that was like insane to watch. Right. So it's just that, I think that was really interesting. And then also seeing the different differences in performances, because obviously the car, like traffic, whatever, WEC, there is 36 cars on track and IMSA, there is 53 total cars. So like the traffic is different. The actual cars are different. So I think that was like really one of the most interesting parts. Like Albuquerque raced both days, and then I think he like finished in second in WEC, but then he ended up crashing out in IMSA, which we can talk about. But I think that was super, super interesting. And the track itself was like really easy to get around, super nice. The people are insane in the membrane, like turn 10, holy cannoli, those people are a different breed. But it was so awesome to see, because a lot of people are Florida locals and they're Sebring locals, and there's nothing that really happens in that area of the state besides Sebring. So people are just so excited for it, and they really love the drivers. They love the environment, and you can really see that. Like it's a true event, and also the racing is good. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Two races that were better than F1 this weekend would be WEC and IMSA. So I don't have a lot of like WEC recap other than Toyota won by 64 laps, and it's definitely going to get BOP'd to hell before poured him out in a couple weeks. But
yeah,
let's talk IMSA, because IMSA race was bonkers. And other than the cautions being a little too long as per IMSA wave around rules, was that the most kind of just like, I don't know, I'm going to call it the cowboy race. Like, it was just like the Wild West, like from start, essentially the start to obviously the finish. So Frenchie, from watching at home or wherever you were watching, what did you think of the race? Oh, we made IMSA, we made predictions for this. We probably don't have them written down, do we?
No.
Okay. I do know that Tim correctly got the Toyota that won. I think he picked that one. And there was one or two in IMSA that I'm pretty sure I nailed, but I don't remember like what was what other than that at this point, because it's, you know, Thursday night now. So what did you think of at least IMSA or the weekend as a whole?
I mean, I thought it was fantastic racing to watch. Some of it was embarrassing. LMP3, just completely
not their finest weekend.
But I'm not even singling out the category, because we've had that discussion on this podcast, and I don't want to lump all the drivers in together. But whatever happened under yellow, while the one LMP3 car just completely drove right into the Porsche GTP car, was surreal. That shouldn't happen. Like, minimum level of skill. That wasn't even like a skill issue. I don't know what that driver was doing. Like, did they drop something and like bend over or something? Like, was he trying to tie his shoe? Like, what was happening?
Well, so one thing I do want to say about WEC quickly before we move fully on to IMSA, what's also LMP3 related, was I watched the start from the pit lane. And so as soon as they crossed, like after they did the formation lap and they crossed the checkered line, I like doubled it back to the media center so I could like really watch the first lap or as much as possible from the TV so I can know what was happening. And I remember running like through, and I texted you guys too. The paddock was the quietest I have ever heard a paddock in my entire life. Not a single person on a single team was speaking. And I was like, okay, either WEC is boring and these people are lame, or something serious just happened and I don't know. So I booked it back. It turned out turn one, lap one, and LMP3 just completely bonked it and spun out and was sitting in the middle of the track ahead of GTD cars, basically. Like, I think he was ahead of like 28 cars, had to go around and try to pass him.
Yeah.
And it's like, turn one, lap one of an 8-hour race, my guy. And you were about to wreck like 28 people's days right now, more than 28 people, right? So, I mean, I think that it's maybe it is worth a larger conversation of the role LMP3 plays in a lot of these catastrophes. But I thought that was, I mean, it brings interest, it brings chaos, which people watch racing because of interest in chaos, but things like that. And then things like, as you said, Frenchie, IMSA, where it was literally just a yellow flag and he just like went straight into him for no other reason. Like, come on, you got to do better than that.
I think this was like LMP3 in Daytona was pretty decent. Like, I think they kept it clean. This was definitely not the case, and it's not every driver, obviously, but it was definitely not a shining example between that and obviously IMSA. And yeah. So Frenchie, where do you want to go next with talking about IMSA or talking about either?
Yeah, I'm just going to say that, I mean, for as few GTP cars as, you know, we saw finish, we can't really just crap all over LMP3 for having accidents and incidents and wrecking out of the race without criticizing those guys. I mean, you got to finish an endurance race, man. But we saw a lot of just dumb, overly aggressive moves. And I think you and I were texting about that, is, you know, even like early in the race, they were going for stuff that was just like, this is a do or die move. And I know that that's kind of what IMSA has turned into, but I don't know what it is about Sebring that just turns it up a notch in terms of the, I don't know, whatever it is. Like, everybody just seemed like they were driving pissed off.
It seemed to me, and I think this is what I said to you or in the Twitter group chat, it's just, it felt like a very sloppy race.
I just want to correct myself really quickly. The lap one, turn one, LMP3 incident was IMSA. I was thinking about the Ferrari that flipped over in WEC on the first lap.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
At turn one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was another thing, that there was just like a yellow flag immediately. So for both days on both races, there was pretty much, I remember actually specifically the commentator was saying like, and we're like, we're racing, I really hope for a lot of green flags. And it was like immediate yellow flag for both days. So
the commentator's
like,
cool. Curse.
Exactly. So sorry, I just wanted to quickly fact check myself.
That's okay. What next?
The Chip Ganassi lit on fire.
Oh, yep. Bourdais lit on fire. No, I forgot about it, but I did not miss it.
Wait, you said Sebastian Bourdais lit on fire. You didn't explain that it was his vehicle.
The car.
No, the vehicle. No, I said Chip Ganassi.
No, but Mike then said Sebastian Bourdais was on fire, it sounded like to me.
My fault.
No, he was out of the car.
Yeah, for anyone who didn't watch, Bourdais is fine. He was just angry.
Yeah.
As usual.
I was actually sitting in the pit lane right outside of there. I'm like friendly with their tire guy. And so I was like talking to him and he's like hearing something on his radio. He's like, hold on. So of course I go to the like actual, as closest to the barrier as I can get to see what was happening. And I see the car come in and I see Bourdais jump out immediately. I'm like, oh, but there was no other driver to get in ready. And I was like, oh God, what's happening? And then smoke just started pouring out of the top of this car. Like they opened the engine cover and it was just like a swath cloud of black smoke covering like three different pit boxes. And I was like, that's not good.
Yeah. And I think, well, I'm glad everybody was okay. And let's jump to the end, because I think this is going to be one of those things that is like one of those in the season, like YouTube recap at the end of the year. And I don't really know how to describe what happened, but we're talking about the big incident where half of the GTP field got taken out and a BMW ended up in second place on the podium. And Scott McLaughlin in an LMP2 finished on the podium in third overall, because it was just complete mayhem. So Frenchie, what is your take on the incident?
We know Albuquerque, I think, right, is rather aggressive, but I don't think he did necessarily anything wrong, right? He pitted, and I think they lost a few places in the pits. He was trying to get them back in traffic on the Porsche, which really seemed to come alive at night for some reason. It was just like kind of nowhere all day, and then at night looked super competitive. That was Jaminet in that car, I think. That was number six.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Nasser was in the seven at the time. So it was just a gap closed around GTD traffic while Albuquerque was trying to go around, I believe, the outside of a corner going into turn one, I think. Mm-hmm. And so he just kind of goes off, he slides through the grass, and unfortunately happens to come back on and literally takes out the car that, you know, at first looked like took him out, kind of shoved him out of the way. And then I don't know how this really happened, because it was hard to see in the dark, but then the number seven Porsche just like kind of jumped up over the top of the wrecked cars. And we lost a bunch of GTD cars in that. I mean, it was just really unfortunate end to the race. Last year, pretty much the same thing happened with the Wayne Taylor Acura. And it was with the Action Express car who benefited this time. But it just seems like the end of the Sebring race, there's always a yellow that leads to, I don't know, 15 minutes or so left. And it just becomes this, not demolition derby, but it becomes NASCAR almost. Like it becomes the like green, white checkered flag overtime finish, where it's like, how many wrecks can we have in this last sort of time? I don't know. I'm sure Roger Penske was furious, as was Tim Cindric. I mean, Chip Ganassi, I'm sure, was really angry when his car blew up, but at least he didn't have to deal with crash damage. Wayne Taylor, we actually saw, he didn't seem as angry as I expected. I thought that little South African was about to be like on top of Porsche's pit stand, like choking someone. I was expecting mayhem, and it was mostly on track. And it seems like everybody was okay with what happened and accepts that it was a racing incident. But I don't know. Like you said, it was definitely sloppy and unfortunate for all those cars, because I don't think Pipo Durrani and the number 10 Action Express car deserved the win. They got it. And the BMW definitely wasn't one of the faster cars, but it ended up on the podium out of luck. So good for them for being there at the end.
You mean Pipo in the 31 car?
Did I say 10?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I meant the 31 Action Express Whelan Engineering Cadillac DPI car. Or DPI, sorry, GTD.
GTP.
GTP. I'm going to get all of the letters wrong.
Frenchy has gone off the rails.
I've short-circuited. Yeah.
Sarah, that's do you actually, have any thoughts?
It's my anger well, at Tebow.
The Cadillac win was the first Cadillac win in the new IMSA GTP era. I mean, obviously it came because they just avoided the mess of the rest, but I thought that was interesting.
Tebow usually doesn't avoid accidents either, so that was surprising.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't really have too much to add to that. It was just like a lot of chaos at once. Like the, you know, who was it? Jaminet was trying to avoid the GTV cars in front. Mm-hmm. Albuquerque was trying to make the pass, and just everything mm-hmm. went wrong at the same time. So it's like, it sucks. I get why I could see everybody being wanting to argue and be mad in that case, but mm-hmm. it is what it is.
Did you want to talk about the announcing that you brought up to me? Was there anything you wanted to mention about that potentially?
I mean, I didn't think TV coverage for part of it was that great, but we won't be too mean this week. We'll maybe we'll see how the season goes before I go there.
That's unlike you.
I know.
Is a little pep in your step today? What's going on, host?
No, not really.
No.
It's raining here, so no pep.
Well, I think what I did enjoy about after that whole thing was I was worried that they were going to end on a yellow flag, and that just would have been sad. And they did go green with 4 minutes left. And I don't think that there was like much racing happening after that, but I thought that was good. And then even that Scott McLaughlin, got his first WeatherTech championship victory in LMP2. Like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely, like, from the incidents, there was some cool things to happen. Even in, like, it's, I remember at hour 7, Simpson in the tower car, spun into the barriers and got nose damage. And so nobody expected them to do well, and for them to end up getting a victory is pretty cool. Like, it's just like, it's interesting to see those types of things. And again, as you said, host, that getting an LMP2 getting third overall, like, you don't hear that. So I don't know, even like at WEC, there is some really interesting things about the podium, even though Toyota obviously dominates and that's a normal thing. I think this was Toyota's 40th WEC victory in their decade of experience. But like, I think if I remember correctly, during the press conference afterwards, they said that Mike Conway is like the third most winning driver in WEC now because of that. They obviously cross the line with like 2 laps ahead of everyone else, which is insane. In hypercar, Ferrari got their first overall podium in WEC, and they got a pole position the day before, which wasn't expected. For Ben Keating, you know, he had a new car, a new team, and new teammates, and they got like 6th overall. They were on the podium. But like, there was definitely still like some really interesting things that happened.
Yeah, I agree. It was such a fun Friday and Saturday combo, even just watching at home / on a train / at the bar / hungover on Saturday morning.
That's what happens when you have a 12-hour race.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And I'm looking at the IMSA kind of lap data, and man, Bourdais had such a good car. He was, I think he had the fastest lap of the race. Oh, he had the fastest average lap of the race over his 103 laps that he ran. So that's,
That car was running really, really, really well. That car was like killing it until they turned into flames.
But not suspiciously so. Like, we don't suspect anything from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
If you know, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The only last thing, which was kind of sad, was watching the Meyer Shank go out, because obviously they had won Daytona. So I'm sure that was like a blow to them, but maybe it was good to let someone else win sometimes.
Yeah, I think they've definitely gotten a little bit of a dose of reality with the penalty and then the wheel falling off in the middle of the race and all that fun stuff. But Frenchie, do you have any last thoughts for the episode? Not forever.
Yeah. Are you threatening me?
Yeah.
I just heard Beavis saying that in my head. I guess the only thing I'd say is that We still really don't have an idea of which car is the best, right? Yeah. I think the BOP has actually been done pretty well. I mean, from what it looks like, I mean, so the BMW, something's going on there, and I'm thinking that's them, not BOP. Unfortunately, that's holding them back a bit. But the rest of the GTP field and just, I mean, it looks like they've really balanced it well, and there's nothing to complain about. And people love to crap all over IMSA and WEC for BOP, but hey, for a new formula in IMSA, at least they got it right in my eyes.
Yeah, fair enough. Oh, we should also mention, after talking about it with Trevor a couple weeks ago, the GTD and GTD Pro BOP was kind of put back in line. Like I think we mentioned last week too, the restrictor size was increased for the Porsches and Pfaff pulled out the win. So good for them. And before we sign off, make sure to go to the pinned tweet in our Twitter and vote for us on the racing podcast of the year. Make sure you have to create an account first. I've had like 10 questions about that. Create an account. You can only vote once. And I think the voting ends April 6th or April 7th. So go vote. And we're the only IndyCar podcast on there, or the only kind of IndyCar focused podcast on there. So go do that. And we'll be back next week to talk about to preview Texas and preview Australia. And IMSA is off for a couple of weeks. I don't remember where they are next. It might be Laguna.
They go to Portimao.
Oh, no, it's WEC is in Portimao, and yeah. IMSA is in Long Beach. So,
and yes. I'll be at Long Beach.
Yes, FYI. Find Sarah if you're at Long Beach. And
come say hi. Come find me.
Come say hi and find her. And hopefully she won't lose her license.
Oh, God, don't say that. Jinx me, host.
Okay, bye.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.